Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirschhorn, and this is the podcast for March 2nd, 2012.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Savvy communities see technology as an opportunity.
Some languages seem to make it easier to get started.
They have their own grammar, if you want. Certain combinations of chemical words mean similar things, and other combinations mean different things.
There are likely specializations that the human brain has evolved to allow us to actually extract meaning from these speech sounds.
This week, neuroscientists are beginning to reconstruct what we've heard by listening to brainwaves, how scientists measure language delays around the world, and a new musical instrument that allows you to sing with your hands. Also, decoding the secret language of worms. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on efforts to keep some of the world's most endangered languages alive and vibrant.
Humans currently speak about 7,000 languages across the globe, but about half of those are in danger of going extinct, and some have only a few living speakers left. But digital technologies could help, according to Swarthmore College linguist David Harrison, who leads National Geographic's Enduring Voices Project.
My job as a linguist is to document some of the world's most endangered languages and to work with the communities to ensure the survival of their languages. One of the ways to do that is to help build digital tools to build a presence on the internet for these languages.
This could mean anything from talking dictionaries to social media.
Some people see technology as a threat to the survival of small languages. But what I found in my travels around the world to meet with the last speakers of languages and with small language communities is that the savvy communities see technology as an opportunity, a way to tell their story, to expand their reach. Some wonderful examples of this include people using social media like Facebook to have conversations, dialogues, post comments in endangered languages.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Not all kids start talking at the same time, but it's important to identify those who are delayed. That's because delayed speech in toddlers is a risk factor for language and reading difficulties later, and can sometimes be a sign of autism or mental retardation. University of New Mexico developmental psychologist Philip Dale says for American English, if a child isn't speaking 25 distinct words by the age of 2, it could be a sign of a delay.
We find that vocabulary size is a very strong predictor of being able to put words together. There's a very strong relationship between the two aspects of development.
But he adds that screening criteria for late talkers depend on the culture.
For example, the word chocolate is acquired earlier by Mexican Spanish-speaking children than North American English speakers. On the other hand, American English children learn the word rain before Mexican children do. We also find that it's helpful to ask about gestures, about waving and showing, that those are excellent predictors of early development. In Japanese, bowing is a gesture that even two-year-olds have learned. Mexican Spanish-speaking children learn a little game called tortillitas, which is a version of patty cake, which is unique to their culture. We cannot take the norms that we find in one country and apply them to another.
What's more, Dale says some languages, such as Danish, seem to be harder to begin speaking than other languages, like American English.
Danish children develop more slowly, although they do catch up by the late preschool period.
He adds that girls tend to start speaking earlier than boys.
We do find a small but regular difference between boys and girls around the world. In virtually every language, girls are slightly faster than boys in the early stage. And that raises an interesting question about whether we should use the same definition for language delay for boys and for girls. The general tendency to use the same norms may be a disservice to girls, because those girls who would qualify as late compared to girls, but would not qualify as late as we compared them to boys and girls together, are at risk for later language problems. And maybe we should use separate charts for boys and girls.
Dale emphasizes that many children who start off slowly often catch up later.
And in fact, may have great strengths in other aspects of development. They might be very strong in spatial or mathematical abilities, for example.
He says that if parents suspect a language delay, they may want to consult a professional, such as a speech pathologist. Next, our guest reporter, Amy Barnfind, has news about the neuroscience of listening.
As you listen to my voice, every word I say triggers a unique pattern of brainwaves. Scientists at University of California, Berkeley, have now learned to analyze these brainwaves and reconstruct the original words that made them. Brian Paisley and other researchers recorded the electrical activity produced by regions of the brain of epilepsy patients while they listened to human speech. He and his team then made a mathematical model that predicts what sound the person heard based upon the electrical activities that were recorded from different areas of the brain.
In this case, we were accurate enough to reconstruct to some extent the sound that was causing those brain responses and to use that to decode individual words.
Paisley says that one intriguing result of this research is to see how the auditory systems of humans encode speech differently from how animals analyze sound.
There are likely specializations that the human brain has evolved to allow us to actually extract meaning from these speech sounds and actually have human language.
Thanks for that report, Amy. Next, Justin Warner says scientists have begun to decode the language of worms.
They may not produce great literature, but small roundworms called nematodes have a surprisingly rich language all their own. As Cornell University chemical biologist Frank Schroeder explains, the worms communicate using chemical signals. His team has found it's not just the chemicals themselves, but how they're combined that determines the message.
They have their own grammar, if you want. Certain combinations of chemical words mean similar things, and other combinations mean different things.
For example, a signal composed of two chemical building blocks tells nearby worms to go away, but adding a third chemical makes other worms gather round instead.
I'm sure that so far we've only touched the surface, really, and that there are many other types of messages that worms exchange, more complicated types of messages that we still need to understand.
He says the worms may use these signals to avoid threats and make optimal use of resources.
If you run out of food, I think it's important to tell everybody else that there's a crisis and that now is the time to stop eating and maybe move someplace else. So very much the same reasons that we would communicate for, right? So if there's a crisis, we tell everybody else so we can take appropriate measures to survive a crisis.
Schroeder says that if we can learn to manipulate these signals, it may help us control undesirable nematodes like crop pests or parasitic worms that infect people.
Thanks, Justin. The voice you just heard singing isn't a voice at all. It was produced by a device that recreates the biomechanics of human speech. It's nicknamed DIVA, or Digital Ventriloquized Actor, and it allows anyone to sing with their hands. University of British Columbia computer scientist Sidney Fells explains.
It makes the same kind of sound that would come out of a normal vocal tract, and then you use your hands to shape that sound into words, into basically everything your vocal tract can do.
Fell says computerized gloves translate movements made by both hands into words. He adds that the device was invented primarily as a new form of musical instrument for both amateurs and professionals. But the technology could also be used to help people whose vocal cords have been damaged to talk again. To see videos of DIVAs in action, visit www.magic.ubc.ca/visualvoice.htm. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, what we can learn from people with a rare mutation that protects them from cancer and diabetes, and how the pancreas tastes sugar. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirsch for AAAS, the Science Society.